www.thebeatles.com. And we'll be joined shortly by Dr. Marilyn Coleman, and she's an expert on all the good things we do out in our yards and in our gardens and in our... She has a forest. and so things she does out there, I'd love to go out and see. I mean, I haven't had a chance to go out and see it, but we will have her join us here in a few minutes. And we'll be talking about what she calls summer doings. I love the title of her. She always sends me an outline of what she's going to talk about. And this outline is titled... Uh-oh, I forgot to do something. Hang on. There we go, I got it. All right. I forget to do that occasionally. Let me get back here and get stuff going back on. I hit the wrong button. There we go. Ding dong. All right. Okay. Shut off. I'm such an idiot sometimes. All right. I think I'm getting it now. Here. Oh, no, I didn't. I hit the wrong button again. All right. There we go. Now I'm good. All right. sometimes when I'm not quite awake, you know, sometimes it takes an old guy till noon to wake up. And apparently today it took me a little longer than normal. But anyway, she has the top of her list, summer doings, and we're going to talk about propagation, weeding, disease control, harvesting, and new plantings, things you can do at this time of the year. And she had another appointment, so she's running a touch close to the vest here as far as time goes. So we'll pick her up as soon as she gets, as soon as she calls in. I hope the first hour or first 45 minutes of the show were not embarrassing, but I think she's calling in right now. Hang on. Hi, Dr. Coleman.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm very good. I just introduced you for the show and told them a little bit about... I love the title of your outline, Summer Doings, and that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And the first thing is, and I've already got a question I want to ask you about this when we get to the end of the propagation segment, but the very first thing is propagation and what you need to, what we need to do. And you talk about iris. And I have a question related about ditch lilies and maybe the anti-propagation of ditch lilies. But what do you want to tell us about the iris?
Well, would you like to talk about ditch lilies first?
Yeah, let's do that. I planted... I didn't know I was planting ditch lilies. They were out... the sign on the flowers said daylilies, but they've popped up And they are ditch lilies. You know, they're a little bit darker in color than the orange, but they are definitely orange. And it's just taking over my my perennial garden, and I don't want that many. What can I do to? Can I transfer? Can I move those?
Yes, the best thing to do is to move them and make sure that you have all of the roots, because it doesn't take much of a root to make another ditch lily.
Oh, okay. Yikes, that's going to be a lot of work.
well, there's a lot of ways that ditch lilies are good, but I tend not to put them in my perennial garden, but they're very good to hold back walls, for erosion and stuff like that.
Yeah, and these are very pretty. I'm very happy.
They're pretty, but they take over if you only have a small yard. I had a bunch of kids come over, and they dug up probably 100 pounds of ditch lilies, and I made 6,000 plants out of it that we were going to plant in our new park here in Richwood.
I love that.
Didn't get done, but
Now,
we dug them up, and you can hardly tell that we even dug anything up.
Well, now, if I just go in and just start hacking away around the edge and get it to the size I want, will that hurt the ones I don't dig up, or will they just say the heck with you and keep on growing?
It's like multiflora roses. If you don't get rid of the multiflora roses, when you cut them back, it just makes them grow that much better because they've got less top for the energy that they have in the root. So the best thing to do is to get, it's called a potato fork.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit heavier duty fork than a regular digging fork.
Yeah.
And you kind of go around. Usually they make clumps, and you go around the clumps, and then you take out that whole clump instead of trying to take one lily out at a time. You just figure out, just on your perimeter, you figure out where the daylilies are, and you take that big clump out all at once.
Okay. Now,
and if you put it on a tarp on the ground, you can separate out those daylilies, and then you can put your good dirt back in your garden, because there'd be a lot of good dirt in the garden, but you try to dig them individually. You can leave pieces of the stuff, and then they'll just proliferate very quickly.
Yeah. Now, I was surprised, and I wouldn't have known they were ditch lilies, except for I think you told me about ditch lilies. They're a lily, but they don't have the leaves going up the stem. Is that correct?
Well, most lilies, you have two kinds of lilies.
Okay.
You have the daylily types, which are actually only bloom once for one day, and then you have the multi-blooming daylilies, which are usually called Stella Aura.
Mm-hmm.
There's two kinds. You have a yellow, and you have kind of a burnt orange.
That's what I have, yeah.
And they will grow, they have a much thinner stem, and they're not quite as arched. The what we call ditch lilies have a stem that's, the leaves are probably an inch and a half to 2 inches wide at their biggest point, where the Stella Aura or the other one that's the burnt orange one has a more like 3/4 inch wide frond, it's called. It's the little green part is.
Okay. Well,
but they take over too if you if you've got them in a good spot.
Unfortunately, they are. And this year, last year, there weren't nearly as many, but the flowers were bigger. And this year, the flowers are pretty small. Is that because
that's what happens is that if you, like irises we were talking about, if you don't separate them, they kind of die in the middle because they can't get enough juice.
Yes, you told me
about
that.
And they grow from it's like putting on wax on the candle. They grow from the outside.
Uh-huh.
And the stuff in the middle doesn't get the nutrients, so they get smaller. They've got the same amount of nutrients in that area, but they've got a lot more flowers to feed, so the flowers tend to be smaller.
Okay. All right, well, that's what's happened to mine. Well, now you're talking about your iris. You need to dig those up every 4 years? All the way?
If it were my irises, I had a sun garden in Upper Arlington, but I have a shade garden here, so the irises don't do that well, so I don't have many irises. But if you're an iris lover, you want to dig them up at least every 4 years, because they will, the rhizome, which is the root part of it, sometimes get a little worm in it, and they will take out the nutrients out of that root, and the middle of that round of irises will die.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't take the irises out every 4 years, then the flowers are very small, for one thing, but it also puts a lot of stress on the plants that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to get, there's a little butterfly or moth that lays an egg in on the plant, and it gets down into the stem of the plant and into the root, into the rhizome.
Mm-hmm.
So when you dig up the irises, you want to take off any of the rhizomes that feel empty. And you do this with a sharp knife, and you make sure that what you cut off is burned or sent out with the city pickup. In the country, we burn it because we don't really have city pickup.
Yeah.
But you want to get that out, because it will attract, it will have these caterpillars in it, or eggs in it that will produce caterpillars, and it will produce more of these moths that will lay eggs in the plant. That's their lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So if you dig them up, and when you get ready to put them back in, you always put irises very shallow so that most of the rhizome is out of the soil.
Oh.
And you would put an insecticide 7 or something like that in there, in case you missed some of the eggs and stuff that when you were taking them out. But
mm-hmm.
You usually want to make a very large, or as large as you can possibly make, circle. And you would put one iris in the middle, and then the irises that are on the outside, you put them probably 6 inches apart, the rhizomes.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives them a chance, because that middle part will have the plants on the outside will grow towards the outside and towards the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you this buffer for every 4 years.
Huh.
And then they will be very pretty.
I will, now I don't have irises planted, but maybe I'll do that for next year. Now, I noticed
well,
you, go ahead.
The irises are very pretty, as long as you have enough sun.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you have to worry about irises is if you do what we're talking about now, when you plant them back, you would want to put on something like, we talked about crabgrass preventer.
Yeah.
Because one of the problems with irises is that they get grass on the inside of where the rhizomes are, because there's spaces there.
Yeah.
And if you put, you can put a crabgrass preventer, or you could buy Preen, which is in a little jug that's about 4 times the price of the crabgrass preventer. But it's the same thing. It keeps any annual weeds, annual plants, seeds from germinating.
But it won't affect the iris or the daylilies?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't affect it. It only affects the germination process. It doesn't affect...
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's not like Roundup that would kill vegetation. It
gotcha.
Only keeps germination to a minimum.
Now, I noticed you put a little note on your outline in this section. It says, daylily roots are edible. What do they taste like?
they really are quite good. My son found out that this is the regular ditch lilies.
Yeah.
And... They're not sharp. They're a little bit sweet in flavor, and you can cook them with, you can saute them, you clean them really well, and if it's very old roots, you can peel them, but if it's young roots, then you can just get a vegetable brush and clean off all of the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then you slice them up and you saute them like you would any other vegetable,
mm-hmm.
potatoes or anything else. And you can saute them with spices. They've got a very mild flavor,
huh.
but they're not poisonous.
Now, the ones that I have that are the darker color, are those also edible?
Well, you have to look at the leaf. I was telling you that
yeah.
you have a very wide leaf. The wide leaf ones are ditch lilies, and they're also the cultivated lilies.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't have enough of the cultivated lilies that they want to eat the daylily roots. But they would also be edible, but I do not know about the stellas and,
okay.
and that continually blooming daylily.
Now, you pointed out perennials should be planted 6 to 10 inches apart. I assume that's because they're going to continue to expand. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
When you separate perennials, you can take, I call it a fork. We were talking about the potato fork, which is a long handle that you dig with,
yep.
but you also can get ones that are hand tools. And
yes.
you get two of them, you put in the middle going two ways, and then you pull each way, and that separates the roots. That's also good for separating hosta roots or any kind of roots, but it's particularly helpful for the perennials that you're wanting to do, because you don't want to dig up a perennial and just stick it in another place. You want to separate the plants
mm-hmm.
because they again will have more nutrients to work with if you separate them.
They'll live better, right? I mean, they will actually become young again.
They show better.
Yeah.
We call it a show. They show better
uh-huh.
because you plant perennials for something so you have color all year long, but if you don't separate them, and like Shasta daisies or echinacea or foxglove, these are all perennials that you could separate,
mm-hmm.
and you could propagate them and or give them to your neighbors, but they would show much better because they have more nutrients, and you don't really just want to fertilize what you have, because it's a matter of surface area of the root to whatever food source it has. So if you separate them, then they have more roots
mm-hmm.
to get more energy, and the flowers will be prettier.
Sure, that's logical.
If you don't want to have a lot of perennials, if you plant a particular perennial, I'm thinking of a pincushion plant, if you know what a pincushion plant
not.
Is. But it's a type of lily, but it has a pincushion flowers. Usually they're blue. And it's very pretty, but it grows out not just by seed, but by, like the daylilies, the roots just keep producing more
mm-hmm.
plants.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make this pincushion plant, when you buy it at Lowe's or wherever, it might be in a 4-inch pot
mm-hmm.
or a quart container. But it would grow up to a 5-gallon bucket size
mm-hmm.
in about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And, again, the stuff that's in the middle would not be as pretty. But it's a very pretty plant.
Hmm.
And you can head off the seeds on a lot of the perennials, like Shasta daisies and foxgloves, and those plants mostly propagate by seed.
Mm-hmm.
But the lily type plants and the ones that have rhizomes, they propagate a lot more by the root system than by the flowers.
Hmm.
So you just have to know when you plant a perennial how much you want to have, and you can deadhead the perennials and they wouldn't produce as many new plants.
By deadheading, they don't produce as many new plants?
Well, perennials like Shasta daisies
yeah.
and foxgloves, they produce new plants by the seeds that come out of the of the flower when it dies.
I got you. Okay.
And it's spread along the ground, so it produces more by seed than by root propagation like the lilies do.
One thing we found out about doing perennials is that it's much less work than doing, you know, every year you have to do the annuals. But there's a lot of work, really, for perennials if you want to keep them looking good, isn't there? Or it seems
well, you can head off a lot of that by how you plant them.
Yes, I
understand. A lot of people
that.
Like to have the plants like 2 or 3 inches apart because the first year they look so much nicer, but then they're a lot more trouble because the second through the tenth year they are fighting against nutrients because they're too close together.
Well, that's what's happened in my perennial garden, which is a round garden in my front yard, and it's about 10 feet across, and they've just gotten too close together. Everything has gotten too... So I'm going to have to get out there and separate them. Yeah.
Well, that's where you have friends that need perennials.
There you go.
And they can come and separate them with you, and you can come back in and have a cold drink and cookies, and everybody's happy.
Okay, so I'm going to get a case of Budweiser, and I'm going to sit out front and ask people to come help me.
It works for me.
Okay, you also point out dividing bushes. I didn't realize that bushes were... You make it sound like it's fairly easy if you... Some bushes you can actually force to the ground and they will build new bushes. Is that right?
Oh, that's very easy. Plants like hydrangeas.
Yeah.
A lot of people love hydrangeas.
Mm-hmm.
And hydrangeas do very well if you take one of the main stems and you put it on the ground and put a brick on it or a rock.
That's amazing.
And it will produce roots where it touches the ground. And then once it produces roots, you can cut it off from the main plant and you've got another plant.
I love it.
You could. They also have a thing that you can buy on the internet that looks like a ping pong ball that opens up.
Yeah.
And you can put that you put some potting soil in this little ping pong ball, lock it in on whatever branch you want to generate, and it does the same thing as putting a rock on the ground, but you've got less money in your pocket.
I gotcha. Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
But you can do that, and then what you do is you can see when the new plant starts out because it will actually show roots on the outside of this little ping pong ball.
Huh.
And then you cut that ping pong ball thing off of the rest of the plant.
Now,
but you can literally do the same thing by putting the plant, you know, a limb of the plant on the ground and put a rock on it.
Now, that ping pong ball, do you have to take it off then once you've
it off and you can reuse it.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
It looks like a ping pong ball, but it's got holes in it. Like a laundry basket looking hole.
Uh-huh. I gotcha.
And it opens up. You've got two sides of a ping pong ball and it has a little lock on one side. But all you're doing is putting moist soil on that limb, and then that it's the same thing as if you put the limb on the ground.
Huh. Okay. Well, then
the other thing is if you wanted to propagate roses. Some people, roses don't do very well from seed, but you can do a very good job of propagating roses if you take a rose that is soft wood, not the hard dark wood, but a green part of the rose, and you put it in an old potato.
Huh.
And you can plant the potato or you can leave it on the counter and keep it moist. And that will make you a new rose bush.
Oh, that's kind of a neat way of doing it. Yeah, I noticed
that
you can't really buy rose seeds. I've noticed that.
The rose seeds are not a good way of propagating. And another thing about roses, I don't know if you've ever been to the Park of Roses in Clintonville.
I have not.
In North Columbus, but they have hundreds of different kinds of roses. And you want a rose to grow true to its genetics, and by taking a limb off the rose and putting it in potato, then it's the same plant. The seed, if two roses are close together, you've got only a 25% chance of that rose looking like what you really wanted it to look like.
Huh.
It could be 25% the male plant or 25% the female plant, or it could be a hybrid, which would be 50% of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So most people find a rose they really like, and they don't want to have a surprise. They want it to look like what they want it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So you just put it in a potato. It doesn't have to be a big potato. And you want to take, we talked about stainless steel nails that you put in potatoes to cook in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get something that's like that so that you're not stressing the part of the rose that you took off, because it won't be very stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And you just want to put that in, and you put the nail in to get the hole just about the right size, and then you put the rose clipping.
You don't jam it in, you just put it in gently.
No, you don't want to jam it in, but you want it to be tight, but you don't want to tear up the rose. And you always want to pull off some thorns and some leaves where you put it in. You don't want to put it in on the potato that's got a long side and a short side. It's fat in the middle and it's long.
Mm-hmm.
You want to put it in the long side so that it has more chance to grow roots.
Okay. That sounds like a great idea. Okay, now, the next thing that you have on your list is harvesting. And I love you're talking about vegetables. And you mentioned that the cold weather vegetables like lettuce, spinach, I think, maybe. But
spinach.
Yeah.
They all bolt.
Yeah, bolting. And now, I went in, and I of course, my lettuce all bolt. Well, it didn't bolt because I ate it before it had a chance to. But I thought, well, I really want to have some lettuce during the summer. And I found there's a thing called summer crisp lettuces that do better in hot weather. Have you ever used
you
those?
You can get some of those, but, you know, if you find a nice head of lettuce, not in a bag that's already clean, but a head of lettuce that they call it artesian lettuce.
Okay.
It's like you can buy at Aldi's or Kroger's or someplace like that. And you take off most of the top of that lettuce to eat, the root that's left over, you can put it in the bottom of a milk jug with just a little bit of water, and it won't take long till that's a new plant for you.
Oh, nice.
And you can, once it's got roots, you put it out in the garden.
And you can you do that over and over again? Or is it just a one-time deal?
Well, I would say you want to do it maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to do it over and over because you want to eat the leaves.
Yeah.
And if you do it, say, this month, and you've used up all the leaves by the end of August, because it takes a while for the leaves to come on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do one at a time. You want to do, there's usually four of those lettuces in that package. And you can put all those in you don't want to have the water too high, just barely covering the bottom of the lettuce
mm-hmm.
root. And in about a week, you'll have it so that you can plant it. And you can alternate. You can put some of that in the refrigerator. So each week, you're putting one of those four out. And then by the time the first one is already bolted, then the next one is still good and on. So you're elongating your season.
Well, that's a good suggestion, because if I recall correctly, those artesian lettuce or whatever you call them, they're pretty expensive. And so
there's somewhere between $3 and $4 a bunch. Yeah, there's four of them in there.
Yeah, I guess that's not so bad. Yeah.
No, they're very nice, but, you know, you could do it, you could put it in your own garden, and it takes, you would, you know, you'd have it for probably 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a bad way to do that. And you can also, on cabbages and broccoli and cauliflower, when you cut your cabbage off, if you cut, instead of pulling the root out, you make a plus mark on the root that's left over with a knife, and you'll find that there'll be little cabbages that'll grow around.
Really?
Anywhere from 8 to 12 cabbages will grow on that. And it won't take long for you to have a new cabbage out of that, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, depends on how big a cabbage you want.
Yeah, I was guessing they'd be a little smaller, but...
Well, if you can either leave it on the mother plant, and I wouldn't try to get all 6 or 10 or however many there are, just pick 2 that you think you want,
mm-hmm.
and then make sure that they get fertilizer and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. they'll come on and produce another cabbage about the same size in 3 to 5 weeks.
Huh. Well, that's a neat trick.
You do that with broccoli, cauliflower, or cabbage.
Now, I noticed you said something about freezing leafy green stuff.
That would be spinach or kale or turnip greens or collard greens. Collard greens grow well in the heat. Spinach does not.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But they have some types of spinach now that are more heat tolerant.
Okay.
And, you know, you could have fresh spinach for most of the season, but it's like anything else. You get more than you can use, and spinach does very well freezing it. You want to just, you can put it in the microwave, in fact, instead of blanching it.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it in the microwave and just have it, like, wilted.
Mm-hmm.
And chill it before you freeze it, and then, you know, take it out, and it's not like you would have it for a salad, but it would be a good green vegetable to eat, like you would have a hot vegetable.
Oh, nice. Now, you mentioned dry herbs, beans, and shells. Shelled. I have a surfeit of sage. I just can't stop the thing from growing. It's going crazy. Now, my next door neighbors, both of them use sage occasionally. I don't use sage very much, but I can just dry that, right, and use that for a year.
You want to cut it back as much as you want to cut it back.
Okay.
The problem with a lot of people, they don't want to cut it back far enough.
It's pretty. Why?
It's very pretty, but it grows. When you cut it back, it's just like you give it an energy pill, and it comes back a lot nicer than it was to start out with.
So, like this fall, I should hack that back pretty far, huh? So that.
Well, I hack it back during the season because I don't really like the seeds on. I don't like the flowers on it.
Okay.
And so as it grows, and you can keep it shaped very well, and you just tie the stalks up and hang them upside down in your basement or someplace that's as cool as you can get it,
mm-hmm.
not wet.
Mm-hmm.
And they dry very well. It's just like buying the dried herbs that you get from your grocery store.
Yeah.
But it tastes better from your house.
Well, now, the other thing I have problem with, I have oregano, and it has just gone huge. Can I just hack it back, or what should I do with that?
Well, oregano tends to make a ground cover.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, I don't know about you, but we have lots of poison ivy in the country, so it seems like when it gets going, it'll go through a poison ivy patch, because that's what they seem to do. But you can get an old-fashioned rake that used to be you could get a rake and you pulled up a thing that looks like a toilet tissue roll, and the rake goes into, it's no longer a fan, it's just a straight thing up and down.
Okay.
And you can cut off most of the handle of that rake, and you can stick that handleless fan rake in the ground, and you can hang your oregano over it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's a lot easier to cut, and it keeps it from getting dirty and all that sort of stuff.
It is hard to cut because it does, it goes flat like, it just lays down on the ground. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it just keeps, and wherever it lays down, it'll make another one. But if you want to keep it under control, and it's very pretty, too. But
yeah, it's not bad looking, yeah.
Yeah, but if you have this fan, it's prettier than having as a ground cover.
I can imagine that, yeah. All right.
It's cleaner.
I'm going to.
But we were talking about harvesting. Yeah. You can harvest, like, green beans or crowder peas or black-eyed peas or lima beans, all those things. You can either eat them fresh, green, or you can dry them and have them later.
Now, can you freeze them? That's what I've been doing with my green beans.
You can. I love frozen green beans.
Okay.
I don't really like the ones where the seeds are really big and tough. I like them before they have much seed on it, but You have all kinds of beans.
Yeah.
You've got Kentucky Wonders and Top Crop and all kinds of brands of beans. And some of them do better than others as far as how big that seed is.
Yeah, no, I've chopped them off before the seed gets big because I'm like you. I don't like the big seeds in them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I like green beans like that. But there's other things that you can have, black-eyed peas. You can have... Mm-hmm. Crowder peas or lima beans. Lima beans, you eat the seed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either eat the seed fresh out of the garden, or you can let it dry and have it like you would have beans and ham, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
later. But, you know, if you're really busy and have a big garden, if you pick your vegetable type so that you don't have too much of any one thing, then while you're freezing those green beans, you can be picking the other beans and let them dry.
Now I have,
and you can dry them in the bean itself. You don't have to shell them to dry them. So it's not a lot of work. My brother-in-law used to take beans and peas, and he'd put them in his dryer, his clothes dryer, and shell them because he didn't want to have to shell them individually. It worked pretty good.
Yeah. I hope his wife didn't find out.
He just cleaned it up. And one of the best ways to process corn is that you clean out your dishwasher really good, and you can process about 144 pieces of ears of corn in a dishwasher very quickly. You just put it on a sanding cycle and take them out. You can take the, you know, you can cut the corn kernels off and do it. I don't really like to do that when I'm trying to freeze corn on the cob because you've got too much to cool at a time. But if you're just going to cut it off the cob, you can do 144 at a time in about 20 minutes.
Wow. And that fully cooks them, and they're all ready to go eat.
It's ready to go.
Huh.
You just want to make sure that when you do that, that you take as much of the silks off as you can, because you.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you don't, then you're gonna mess up your dishwasher.
Oh yes, that would be bad.
You don't put any soap or anything, and you make sure that everything's clean, and put it in there, and 20 minutes later, you got corn ready to cut off the cob.
Huh. Well, our next step is plantings, and you talk about planting by division, and mention tomatoes. You cut off the leaf.
Yes,
I've been having trouble. My tomatoes have started to turn red. I have both little ones, you know, whatever they call them, little tiny red tomatoes, grape tomatoes.
Cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, cherry tomatoes. And I also have the bigger ones. Now, I got one big one that was really red, and I turned it over, and it had that leaf blossom disease, you know, where the bottom of the tomato is nasty.
That's that happens when you have infinite rain.
Yes, and
if what you want to do is to make sure you have a regular watering schedule, and most of your garden could do with a 1 inch rain each week. And if you don't get 1 inch of rain, then you need to do some irrigation and put the water on it. Because if you don't, then it's stressed by the heat and lack of moisture. And then when the rain does come, it either splits or you get the blossom rot.
Yeah.
Or it's usually called blossom rot, I believe. But it's a black spot on the bottom.
Yes.
You can't use it.
Yeah,
it's
no.
usually on the nicer ones. You get ready to pick this one, and it's got the black bottom on it. You can't eat it.
It was the only one that had turned red, so I'm hoping the rest of them are okay. And they have been watered, but I was gone for about 4 days, and I came back, and this one was in bad way. But it was just one, so I'm not too unhappy.
But, you know, we were talking about cutting tomatoes. One of the things that if you plant tomato seeds, you've got the time to harvest is when you put that seed in the ground. But if you take cuttings or when you pull suckers off of a tomato plant, those suckers are there, and they counted their time from the time you put the seed in the ground, not when you took that sucker out. So it will have tomatoes on it about the same time as your regular plant.
Oh, that's nice. That means, I always thought, if I do that, then I got to wait 3 months till I get my tomatoes. But that's not true.
No, it has the same timing as the plant that you put in the ground first of all.
So it's feeling just as mature as the original plant. So, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
And that's much better than buying another plant from store or planting seeds, because, you know, you've got, most people got their tomatoes in the ground by Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's thinks it's that old, even if it's just a branch that came off of it.
That's really cool. Now, and if you go try to buy a tomato plant right now, you'll spend if you buy one that's in a big one, you'll spend $10 to get a tomato plant. I don't spend that much on tomatoes. Year around. All right. Let's see, what am I looking
at? There's a lot of plants that I like to put in the fall. I like to have new kinds of cabbages. I love spinach and broccoli and Brussels sprouts. That's some of my favorites, but they don't really do well in this hot July and August.
Right. I've noticed that.
You can get some plants. You know, we always tell them you could make that cross on your cabbage, but can't do that with spinach and stuff like that.
No.
But what you have to do with those plants, and even with snow peas, is that you put the seeds in the freezer and get them cold tempered, and then you plant them in the house where it's cooler, and then you plant the plants outside towards the middle to end of September when it's a lot cooler.
And you will have you'll have a harvest before frost?
No problem.
My. That seems
but
awfully quick.
You want to start putting those seeds in the freezer now, because you want to plant them towards the beginning of August to the middle of August.
Okay. I have some that I could do that with. I will try that tonight. Very good.
Yep.
Now we go on, and I notice you have soil prep. What do we need to do now for soil prep?
There's really not much that you can do right now.
Yeah.
One of the things that people with small gardens don't think about is that if you have, there's a fungus that gets on your brassicas, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and that, and it stays in the soil. So you don't want to plant the same type of seed in the same place every year.
Okay, yes, yeah. I've been trying to do that better and better. I only have three little plots, and so it's hard sometimes to rotate it around, but I've been pretty good on doing that, yeah. Now, we're probably not going to make it all the way through, but let's get to plants that you can plant now. You know, in this, you know, we're getting kind of late in the season, you think?
Well, the best way to plant that you're going to plant now is the seeds that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put them in the freezer now.
Okay.
And then you're going to cold treat them, and in next, you know, early August, you're going to plant them in six packs like you would have from the garden store.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them in the house where it's cooler. Make sure that they get some sun. And then in September, put them out, and they'll produce.
Okay.
They'll be mature, produce snow peas or whatever come when it gets cooler.
Well, we got about 2 minutes to go. Shall we touch on root crop storing?
Yes.
Okay.
The larger root crops, which would be like rutabaga, you
mm-hmm.
can put those in once the rutabaga forms, you can put it in a wax solution, and they'll keep for a year.
Okay.
You want to put them in the cool, not in the refrigerator, but in a cool basement or storage area, and not in the kitchen.
Got a great place for it, okay.
And, yeah, and there's other root crops like carrots.
Yes.
We didn't dig carrots until we wanted to eat carrots.
That's what I've
carrots
been doing. Yeah.
And when we had a garden with the kids, they would go out and move the snow around and dig carrots, and they'd be just fantastic.
My wife thought I was nuts last year because I did that. Okay.
Didn't it work?
Yes, it did work fine. Yeah.
But you can, you know, if we don't have much snow cover, you can put some hay on it, or you can put some straw on it or whatever so it doesn't freeze.
Yeah.
But I don't really dig carrots and stuff until I need them.
Well, we're down to 45 seconds. How can you store potatoes? I'll give you 30 seconds on how to store potatoes.
The first thing you want to do is to make sure that when you dig the potatoes, you don't have any holes.
Okay.
Or bruises on the potatoes.
Yeah.
If the potatoes are good, then you can put them, you can buy a box. It's a wooden box. It's called a potato box.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also make a box. And you want to put lots of paper, newspaper around it so that it's protected from each other.
I'm going to Dr. Coleman, I'm going to have to cut you off. We only have 5 seconds. So, hey, thanks.
That's the way you...
Okay. Thanks for joining us. And
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Marion, Ohio. The voices you want to hear. From Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
What is something, because it's years later now, that would have been a huge show at the time, like a Dr. Quinn, like a David Letterman?
Uh-huh.
You okay? Okay.
Yeah.
The chair buckled over there. Okay. For people listening, no. Something that came in that would have been huge.
A huge...
Lost me at the time. A huge show that he did not do
because of something.
Because he thought, you know, it's just not me. I'm going to have to go in a second.
Yes, there is. Now, our chair keeper over there tells us we're almost up out of time.
I just about didn't survive that. Oh, my goodness.
but we have to. We didn't. That's the question. You don't know it, evidently,
yeah.
Right?
I'd like to have a prize. I'm hungry.
Oh,
you're hungry?
Well,
there's donuts. There's a whole box of...
No.
There's
no.
Orange juice. There's coffee.
I got a friend out there.
There's
I bring her over. She's
there's a T-bone steak and
Charlie, you know what you're gonna get. Five fingers.
Well, we can give you a delivery to take out to your friend, and we have the question. So you don't know it, right? You don't know. But I wish people.